It's time for the Artist Friends Podcast.
Hi, I'm Diane Hunt. I am an impressionist realist painter connecting with nature through my brush. I work in oil paint and watercolor, and I live in the countryside of Maryland's Eastern Shore, not far from the Chesapeake Bay. You can find me online at dianehuntstudio.com and on Facebook and Instagram at Diane Hunt Studio.
Hi, I'm Constance Brosnan of Steve Brosnan's Jewelry Designs. I live in Oklahoma on a prairie. And I make handmade jewelry in silver, copper, and brass. I'm an artist that paints. I paint pastels and in oils sometimes.
Hello, this is Bob J. Kale. I'm the host of this podcast. I am a emerging representational artist. I do historic renderings, seascapes, landscapes, botanicals, birds, and whatnot. Tight illustrative hand in watercolor, pen and ink, and acrylic paints. And I live in Oklahoma City. Hello, it's Monday, a Monday Artist Week. It's time for the Artist Friends Podcast. My name is Clyde J. Kale. You are listening to episode 96 for May the 10th, 2021. And I'm here with my two best artist friends, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson. Hello, Diane.
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Constance. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Constance.
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Diane. Hello, everybody.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast. You two for keeping me company each week. This week, I decided it would be Artist Biography Week. And we have talked about the Renaissance period. We've talked about other Renaissance artists, you know, Leonardo da Vinci and Raphael and Caravaggio. And we seem to tiptoe around, or we seem to neglect Michelangelo, one of the prime artists and prime movers. In fact, when you think of Renaissance, you think of Michelangelo, because he was very much involved and credited with the promoting and institutionalizing the Renaissance art period. So I found a couple of videos about Michelangelo. And then a third video about the Sistine Chapel and the restoration of the Sistine Chapel. So for our listeners, if you go to www.talkartpodcast.com, that's talkartpodcast.com, you'll see the links to those three videos. And when you get the time, visit and watch, and you'll see and hear what we're going to discuss. Now, this was our reference material for the discussion of Michelangelo. How do you say his last name? Michelangelo Buonarroti. I think that was his full name. His art, his life, and he was a sculptor, he was a painter, and he was an architect. And I did gain some new information from his videos. Diane, let's start this discussion with you. Did you learn anything?
Yeah, I didn't know that when he was a kid that he, you know, he wanted to do art all the time, and his father would beat him because he didn't approve of that. That would surprise me. But I guess he wanted him to go into some more standard line of work or something. But he persevered through that and finally got seen by some important people in the Italian area.
You took my you took my point away from me, because that's exactly what I'm going to make. That I didn't know that either. That he was, according to the documentary, his father severely beat him when he was sent to school, literature and philosophy. And here's Michelangelo, you know, doodling, you know, he's making drawings. But his father finally gave in and sent him to art school when he was like 14 years old. And some of the shakers and movers, masters artists of the time, they recognized his talent. That you know, his father gave in, and the world is the better for it. I mean, we are so
much better.
He was very lucky that he got seen by the, you know, the D'Amici family and that whole. I mean, that was such a fluke of luck, it seemed like, you know. It's crazy.
Yeah, because that was when the Medici were the, you know, they were the prime motivators of and the promoters of the artists at the time, you know, and we have quite a bit of art because of them, even though they were rather ruthless. Also, whenever I was thinking Michelangelo, when he was young, the Borgia were running the church. And when you hear people nowadays, you know, they complain about some of the scandals and the misdemeanors and crooks and whatnot in the Catholic Church today. It was nothing when the Borgias were there. All murder and bribery and scandal, and a lot of them had, you know, two or three wives and lovers and illegitimate children. And I mean, it was just, this was in my, you know, during his youth, you know, and survived that after all that. But it's another subject we could go on a 2-hour podcast on, just talking about the history of the church and the how wicked they were, that it's the providence that the church even survived the end to this day, considering back in the 13th and 14th century, you know, the issues they had. Constance, what are your comments about Michelangelo?
I thought it was kind of hard that the church made him. I'm sort of glad that they did make him paint the chapel, but he really hated it. And I think that because he hated it, that a lot of the men that he painted looked angry. And maybe that's why they looked angry, because he really didn't want to be there painting the chapel. I don't know, maybe.
That was new information to me also, with the from the document of the two documentaries, because each one, when I first tried to determine, you know, selecting, I didn't want to duplicate, and I did receive you know, new information from each one, and I forget which one is the first one or second one. When Michelangelo was a little bit younger, he did a painting of a circular painting of a church scene, but he specifically, because see, Leonardo was a big time artist in the area at the time, Leonardo da Vinci, and he specifically painted in a style that was completely opposite of Leonardo. And it turned out that it was a style that no one else, none of the other artists, Raphael or Donato or any, had painted a new style. And he had presented a completely new style of painting. Yeah, and that was unique, you know, for me, new information. I've never thought of Michelangelo as a painter. I've always thought of him as a sculptor, you know, which was his true calling. You know, he wanted to be a sculptor.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious when he wrote his dad that one time after having to do that painting, that he was a sculptor. he said, you know, at the end of the letter, when he signed it, he called himself a sculptor, even though he had to do this painting.
he did not like to paint. I mean,
no.
He, I mean, the story of Michelangelo, he puts it, he's a sculptor, then a painter and an architect. But he liked to do sculpture first. That was his first love. He could look at a stone and decide what he was going to make from that stone before he even started cutting away the marble to make it into whatever he was going to make it into. That was what was more so astonishing to me, is that, I mean, he knew just by looking at the stone what he was going to, you know, sculpt it as.
Yes.
It's just beautiful. Yes. So when you looked at the little tools that he was using to do it with, they were just scant tools that he used to do it with.
I mean, today's modern sculptors, you know, they've got grinders and drills and electrical. Michelangelo's time,
they just had these little picks that he was using.
They had their sweat and their muscles. I mean, that was behind the chisel. Yeah.
The first sculpture I did, I did with marble, and I used the chisels. And you have to take such little pieces off at a time so you can get, because, I mean, and then you have a lot of sanding to do to get it, you know, rounded off like he had. I looking at his sculptures, it's just amazing. And the size of them.
Yeah.
All the delicate, you know, like the fingers and stuff. I just can't imagine carving all that by hand like that.
Very, very.
It's totally amazing.
I've seen the statue of Mary and Christ, and I've seen the statue of David, and it's awe-inspiring to just look at them,
right?
Because they're just amazing to look at, and the fact that they were made so long ago.
I've been very blessed that I was able to stand in front of the statue that he did of Moses. I mean,
now, why did he give Moses horns?
Pardon?
Why did he give Moses horns?
It looks like one, but they're not horns. They're just a hair, you know.
The what?
Just his hair is stuck up. It's not horns.
Are you sure? No. They look like horns to me.
No.
It's just the way the hair curled.
You see it in love. You know,
I thought he even said that was horns on his head.
No, those are not horns. Yeah. That's been a long discussion. Historians have gone over it. No. However, I've been fortunate, you know, to stand like within 5 feet of it. And it is immense. It's giant. But it is so, when you read stories of the Bible, that's how Moses probably looked. Like, you know, historical, like a madman, because he has the Ten Commandments under his arm. Having just been given the Ten Commandments, you know, he had seen the face of God.
Yeah, can you imagine that?
Drove him crazy. So, I mean, it's just, Michelangelo captured it perfectly. I mean, and it is just a remarkable piece of artwork, and so huge and so detailed. And that's why he said those, you know, they look like, from a distance, from a photograph, look like horns, but no, it's just his hair, blocks of hair that he got sticking out everywhere. Yeah. Yeah. Some historians have tried to claim, you know, that they're horns, but no, they're not horns. Won't even talk about that controversy, but that comes about because of something else. A little bit of anti-Semitism, you know, whatever. So, but I also had the opportunity when I was younger to visit the Sistine Chapel. And I don't remember that much. You know, we had a video there talking about the restoration. I had went there before the restoration, and I was with a group at that time. We were hustled through pretty quick. I mean, you didn't have time to spend a lot of time. And the thing about it, I would recommend to anybody who gets an opportunity, because then you will understand the enormity and the largeness of how big it is. But you're not going to see very much because it's so high up.
Way up it, yeah.
Yeah.
So look at the photographs are far better. You get a far better appreciation.
But still, if I went there, I would want to be able to not be rushed through there. I would want to be able to stand there and look. I mean, if you get there, why not be able to stand there and look? Because
your neck gets,
it's such a vast body of work that's up there. I would want to be able to stand there and look, you know what I'm saying? Because now it's been restored, you know, so I can imagine it's beautiful.
Tours, when you go there with a group, you know, it, they rush you through. You don't get time to, you know, to, and I don't, you know, like I said, being COVID, I'm sure they don't have any tours now, but when they open, when they get, things get back to normal, the Sistine Chapel, because it's a functioning chapel of the church, they, you know, they don't have it open to the public where anybody can just go walking around on their own. They usually have to be part of a tour group, and, you know, you, and they kind of hustle you along so you don't get much time. But to get a real appreciation for the art, you should, you know, you have to look, you know, look at the photographs, because you get a deep, you know, because there's been outstanding, now that's been restored, there's even more photographs, far more, more beautiful. In fact, speaking of the restoration, I learned something completely new. The one image, which is supposed to be from his painting of the Last Judgment, the image of that everybody have for centuries have said that it man's, where the guy is crunched up and he's holding his hand over his face and he's got an expression of horror and distress on his face. Did you think about when they were talking about restoration, when they removed, because of modesty, the church during Michelangelo's time, a few of the images were like 400, you know, images in that painting, like 400 naked bodies. And they had ordered, they had a, who on certain bodies was told to paint loincloths, you know. But then in the 18th century, they painted even more loincloths, bigger loincloths, covering more. Well, during the restoration process, they went and they decided to remove the loincloths, most of all of them, except for maybe, you know, I think they said only 17 or whatever. But on that image, when they removed the loincloth, they discovered it's a woman.
Yeah.
Angel had painted a woman. And for centuries, people have thought it was a man, you know?
When I looked at it, I realized the reason people thought that was because, one, the hair was kind of short, and two, the build of the woman was very muscular, almost like a man.
Yes.
And then the second one that they removed it from, the snake that was wrapped around was biting genitals. It was like, wow, that's kind of harsh.
Michelangelo, he painted certain messages because, like you said, he's a painter. He didn't like, you know, he was kind of like ordered and pressured into doing
it. Yeah, he was kind of pissed about having to do it.
Yeah.
And on the ceilings, he spent 4 years of his life, you know, on his back, and actually it ruined his health because, you know, he had problems and the paint, you know, and in his eyes have you ever watched the movie, the Charlton Heston movie, 1965, called The Agony? Favorite scene is when Rex Harris, who played Pope Julius, keeps coming and says, Buonarroti, when are you going to get done? And the Charlton Heston, who played Michelangelo, gave him the best artist, what every artist said, it will be finished when it's finished.
Yeah.
That's a true first impression. It'll be done when it's done.
That had to have been such a huge project, though, to do it when you didn't really want to be doing it. That would have been excruciating.
Yeah, instead of being,
I mean, it was horrible.
Yeah. I mean, he was a sculptor and did not want to be painting. And they were, you know, commissioned to paint this whole ceiling of this church when he'd rather be doing sculpture, you know, so that had to be rough.
I mean, he started, it's interesting, he started the burial tomb of Pope Julius when Julius was alive. He was younger, he was like in his 40s. And then Julius pulled him away to paint the Sistine Chapel, you know, so he had 4 years of doing that, you know, and then after Pope Julius died, his family members they refused to pay Michelangelo. First of all, they refused to pay him for the work he'd previously done, and they lowered the amount they were going to pay him, and they also reduced the amount of, he had a grandiose plan.
Yeah, to reduce the size of it.
Multiple figurines that he was going to do, you know, and they just changed everything. And so here he is, he's like, what, in his 70s, and he's doing, finishing up, you know, the tomb. And that's why I think another thing, the expression of Moses probably reflected a little bit of Michelangelo's attitude at the time. He was.
I'm sure it did.
Why Moses looked so mean and you know, and frustrated. Michelangelo saying, you dirty bees.
It's a wonder they didn't all come out looking like that. You'd think his attitude would have been reflected in everything. You know, I just can't imagine having to do something for that long in those conditions.
Well, there was
not something you wanted to do at all.
Yeah, it was like the scene of hell. You know, that really, to me, kind of reflected his attitude on the whole thing. You know,
they said there were like 400 figures that he had put in that in the Last Judgment, which was a scene, yeah, the scene of hell. That and they were all nude, not a single bit of clothing. Any that he did that on purpose.
I think he did.
They confirmed, historians have confirmed in his writings to his father, you know, and friends, you know, his letters about it, that he purposely, that was his revenge. But then they, and I guess there was one cardinal who was very much, you know, very conservative cardinal who was very much, no, you have got, you know, insisted. They was going to refuse payment unless he put clothing on, you know, on the figures. And he hoped. At that time, stood up for Michelangelo, did request a bit of some clothing, loincloths here and there, you know. In fact, Michelangelo still refused to do it. So they had one of his students, you know, paint some loincloths, you know, on some of the figures. But the majority of them were still very much bare naked, as they say. Yeah. Yeah. But it's interesting, you know, he is, and then something else I learned, which I did not know at all. I don't know why I didn't know it, but I guess I haven't paid that much attention, you know, because I'd studied Michelangelo before. He was actually the architect, the project manager for the St. Peter's Basilica, for the construction of St. Peter's Basilica, and some of the work on that was some of his own work, you know, that he was a really outstanding architect, you know, technically you know, achieved, and did some, because they had a problem with erecting the dome, and he had resolved that, you know, he had come up with a solution on how to make that happen, you know, and everything. So you know, the largest church in the world, you know, St. Peter's Basilica, and Michelangelo had his hand in, you know, in completing that, you know, plus several other churches around Rome, you know, that, and throughout Italy, you know, and he was very much involved in. So he's a sculptor, he's a painter, and he's an architect, truly a Renaissance man, you know, in every sense of the word.
And yeah, it is amazing that he was so well accomplished. It's, you know, I mean, since sculpture was his thing, that he was so accomplished at painting and architecture too. You know, it doesn't happen every day.
his competition at the time was Raphael and Leonardo da Vinci, and you know, and a few others there. He was a bit vain, because he was always going up against Leonardo da Vinci, and he would do usually the opposite of what Leonardo did. So I thought that was interesting. You know, reminds me of some of our artists nowadays. You know, we've got, you know, Damien Hirst and Jeff Koons and some of these others, you know, they're trying, it's like they're trying to outdo each other, you know, just like back in the Renaissance period, you know. Well, that's about it. We got anything else to talk about Michelangelo?
No, I think it was about it.
Okay.
That covers it.
That covers it. All right.
Yeah.
Well, you've been listening to the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 96 for May the 10th, 2021. And we've been talking about the great Michelangelo, his life and work. And like I said, if you go to www.talkartpodcast.com, talkartpodcast.com, you can see the links to the videos that we were talking about. And if you don't know anything about Michelangelo, there's an opportunity there. Some great videos. It shows his art and the commentary and about his life and how some of his works came about. So I'm going to say goodbye to Diane and Constance. We'll let Diane say bye to all of our listeners.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Constance. Good night, everybody.
And it's your turn, Constance.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Dan. Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks to everybody for listening. And as always, if you enjoy these podcasts, please give us a thumbs up rating, a positive star rating, however you find this podcast. Until next week. Bye, folks.
The Artist Friends Podcast is produced and edited by Clyde J. Kale. Participating artists, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson and Clyde J. Kale. You can find more information about Diane Hunt at www.dianehuntstudio.com. Constance Bronson at www.etsy.com/shop/CBROSNANS. Clyde J. Kale at www.cjkaleartworks.com. If you would like to participate or appear as a guest on the Artist Friends Podcast, please email cjkale@mystery-otr.com. If you enjoy these podcasts, please give us a thumbs up or a star rating. And most of all, send us your comments. This podcast is issued under the Creative Commons license.